What up, Brendan?
Greetings, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast is back. We're recording again on a Wednesday. I think it seems like Wednesday is becoming a more common day for our recordings than Tuesdays recently. I don't know if
but on the internet, none of that matters.
Yeah. I mean, people could be listening to this on like Smorg's Day. In the future, I mean, who knows what days are going to be like.
If our wonderful podcast could last beyond the Gregorian calendar, I would be fine with that.
Well, we'll keep going. We'll keep going with our podcasts, as many as we can muster. We're at 129 this year, or not this year. I guess it's 129. Yeah.
Wow, I've blocked out on a lot of those if we did 129 this year. I remember like 7.
Yeah, but there are at least 7 good ones anyway, right?
I hope we have a better ratio than that.
Well, it's up to you, the listeners, to tell us. So please let us know. Although, if you are going to let us know that these are bad, just remember that it's a free show. So... what you gonna do?
And constructive criticism. Not just being an asshole.
Right. Although, in the vein of being an asshole, we're bringing back the Fuck the Police segment to our fair show. Fortunately or unfortunately, it's become a regular topic on the show. This week, we get news out of Chicago about a alleged... alleged kind of weird interrogation building that's in Chicago that seems to be off the books. And when people are taken there, there's no record of them being taken there, and they're often detained for long periods of time. There are people who are close to it that are ascribing it to a CIA black site, which is getting a lot of notoriety in recent months anyway, after the report on the CIA and tactics overseas on the war on terrorism. Well, this is supposedly a domestic implementation of a lot of those advanced interrogation techniques, if you will, but completely domestic. So it's just by police in the United States, specifically in Chicago, but this is alluding to this happening in probably a lot of metropolitan areas. Any large city is probably doing this, because it seems to be the kind of thing that is done it just takes too long to process criminals. So if we brought them directly to where they're supposed to go for processing, it would take too long. And so one thought is that these are kind of unofficial way stations in order to circumvent the right to a speedy trial. But other instances and people close to it are saying this is actually worse than that. This is where people go to disappear to have much harsher things happen to them that would be normally allowed by law. And as you might guess, as we're introducing this as part of the Fuck the Police segment, this is not a thing.
Yeah, that's pretty clear. When I read this article, it made me think of the movie L.A. Confidential.
Uh-huh.
And the Victory Motel, where
yes.
Babe's pig farmer went out and beat the shit out of people. It was the chief of police.
That'll do, Pig. That'll do.
Yeah.
Oh, that was such a good movie. And you can listen to Brendan talk about this movie on episode 12A, if I'm remembering. Oh, 12B.
No, 12B.
12B, yes.
Yeah, I like it in fiction. I don't like it in real life. This should not be a thing.
Right. I mean, this is pretty much the opposite of what we've been talking about with police accountability kind of. I mean, we were talking about how it'd be good for them to wear cameras. It would be good if there's a lot more transparency. And this is pretty much the opposite. There are no cameras. Everything is off of the books. There's no record of people going anywhere.
Not allowed to contact lawyers.
Yeah.
And it's also apparently where they store all the military equipment that they get through that wonderful program that the government has. Apparently, Cook County has gotten over 1,700 pieces of military equipment from the Pentagon for their police force.
Wow. Wow, this touches on all the high points of...
Yeah.
All the nada things that we generally ascribe to stuff. They're violating civil rights, their militarization of the police, lack of transparency. If only they were surveilling people from there as well. I'm sure they... I'm sure there's something about that.
Yeah, it's our own little Guantanamo in Chicago.
Yeah. Well, hopefully blowing the lid off of this doesn't mean that it quickly dissipates and disappears. I'm really hoping there's a lot kind of more investigation into this, and hopefully a lot more transparency, at least, it makes it look like there ought to be people looking at this a little closer, not just in Chicago, but in general, because I would assume this doesn't occur in a vacuum. There's probably other things like this in other places. So, generally, we'll fall on the side of the police for their existence and their duty. I think this is just another indication of the misalignment of that duty and action. So hopefully that gets pulled together relatively quickly. Actually, incidentally, Brendan, have you been listening to This American Life recently?
No, I don't listen to other podcasts. That's not true. I do, but not that one anymore.
recently, This American Life did a story or a series of them. I think they did two, although for whatever reason, my computer's only downloaded one of them. And it follows the police. And it's actually an interesting story. It's like how, I think the subtitle is like how they see us. Or cops, how they see us, or something like that. It's kind of the a police, or at least the first one was kind of a police administrator's view of how policing is, and how there are problems, and how he was trying to work with the system to fix it. It was actually a really good episode. So, you know, if you don't have to listen to it, you can just kind of have someone else listen to it and tell you. Not on their podcast, of course, but you know, find some way to check that one out.
If you want to start another podcast, Alan, you could do like a Talking Dead style analysis of This American Life. Like, This American Life is not a thing.
That might be a little confrontational. I don't know. But speaking of confrontational, there was an interesting confrontation between I think it's a security chief or someone like a CTO, someone in charge of technology and its implementation at Yahoo, along with someone from I believe it's the NSA, someone kind of high up in the NSA, and it was at a conference. Kind of talking about email and cryptography and how the NSA wants to work with Yahoo and a lot of the other providers in order to get access into what is encrypted data, encrypted for the users. So things like email, but other bits of data too, data, stored data, stuff like that, all in the name of kind of law enforcement and the kind of interestingly, the Yahoo exec went to bat for privacy advocates and called out the NSA guy for wanting to create backdoors into the system. And I know in the article I found, he kind of the NSA guy kind of backpedals a little bit and says, "No, we don't want backdoors. We just want to be able to work with the system and have a framework for surveillance." And
Which is basically saying we want backdoors into the encryption, but we don't want to call it that because that's a shady thing. So let's make those, but call it something else so people don't freak out. Like, we want you to put holes in your security that we get access to.
And I
Which the
thought, well, first of all, not a thing.
No.
But second of all, the interesting comeback from the guy at Yahoo was, well, you know, this is a request from the U.S. government, and so shouldn't we give the U.S. government more consideration than just like, you know, a police department or something like that? And the comeback to that from the Yahoo guy was, what if other governments wanted access too? Do we have to build in a way for other governments to be able to look? Is it, and don't those ways have to be distinct? Like, what if one government wants a lot of access? What if one just wants a little bit of access? Do we have to open up loopholes for all of these different entities in the name of safety and everything? Or is privacy really you know, not that valued by the government. And it's a nice little snippet of an argument. I think from one point of view, it exhibits all the kind of, you know, ridiculous double speak that that is coming out of the NSA regarding privacy and how to essentially break into systems that exist. And then on the other hand, it's really cool to see Yahoo kind of stepping to the plate for this one. I mean, I think especially Yahoo, because I feel like, you know, Yahoo doesn't really have as big of a stake as like Google or a Facebook to you know, step in the way of the train that is the NSA kind of running down the tracks of no more privacy. But I mean, Yahoo does have a pretty sizable presence in email still, and a lot of their other properties, you know, are related to kind of, you know, personal integrity and all that kind of stuff. So it is cool to see them at least in this instance coming down, you know, and butting heads with the NSA a little bit. So right
Yeah,
on Yahoo.
it is good to see them doing something good for that. And you know, they're good at the fantasy sports. Their search engine is garbage.
Well, did you
And
know?
Yahoo News is a joke.
Yeah, well,
But you know, it's nice to see that they were, you know, stepping up to the plate here.
yeah, and Yahoo TV is gonna have community, right? And their search engine is kind of not awesome, but
I'd rather
it's
use Bing.
wow. I don't know if I would go that far, but
Have you looked at their site,
interestingly,
at their search recently?
Firefox just their contract with Google expired for their whatever or their agreement for the default search engine has changed. So now the default search for Firefox is Yahoo. And I found out that my favorite search engine, DuckDuckGo, which supposedly does not cache your searches and does not correlate them with your IP address or any other data in order to make advertising work, they actually are based or they filter their stuff, but it comes from Yahoo. So I don't know. I've found Yahoo to be very decent, although I do sometimes flip the search into Google to get different results. So I'm of the mind that Google does index a lot, but it doesn't index everything. So I do like seeing search results from other companies.
I hate their interface.
It
hurts my eyes to look at.
You have it there, right? But
go ahead, steal my data. But you know, look nice at least if you're going to do that.
I would actually try DuckDuckGo. I think you'd like it, and if you do want to force Google results, you can just add a exclamation point G tag to your search string, and it will push it through Google, but it will also scrub it so it's not giving them cookie information.
Oh, well, I enjoy being creeped out seeing ads tailored specifically for things I've previously searched. I like that feeling of getting goosebumps and feeling like I'm being watched.
Okay. All right. Well, if that works for you. But speaking of Google again, actually, and kind of a creepy move this week, they sent a mail to all of the people who are using their Blogger platform. That's their kind of maybe not the biggest, but certainly one of the bigger hosted blog platforms that's out there. Anyone that had that had self-identified with the adults or not safe for work or explicit tag for their blog, they sent all of those folks notices saying that they would completely restrict their blogs to private only if they did not comply with a new set of regulations that essentially there is no, I think it's a nudity ban on anything that comes out of the Blogger platform.
Yeah, banning nudity on the internet, good luck with that.
Yeah, I think it's I think they can enforce it because it's their system, but it I think, you know, for a lot of reasons that's a really bad idea. You know, it does amount to, I mean, it's not censorship because you're not given a right to speak on Google. It's just Google owns the platform and they can do whatever they want with it. And it's yet another kind of reminder of that walled garden system of stuff where if there's no truly public commons of anything, then it's just a bunch of private companies running around, you know, restricting access in kind of weird ways. And this is one of those kind of weird ways. Additionally, though, it is kind of a, I don't know, it's that same heavy-handed approach that a lot of other systems use when banning things. I mean, they you can't have a nuanced algorithm for nudity. And so it can break a lot of freedom of expression things, sure, but it also will break things like sex education blogs or anything like that. And it's that's kind of a real disservice to the community at large. But you know, one of the points in the article is that they're not for the community at large, they're for the shareholders at large, and that's really what it amounts to. Remember, Google is a publicly traded company, and a lot of the actions I take have to please those shareholders. So it's again another reminder of the kind of having a lot of private companies, or even public companies for that matter, that aren't acting in kind of the way to make public spaces can be kind of bad. So, boo, not a thing.
Hear, hear.
It also, I mean, it effectively kills those sites the way that they're changing it, because they're not opt-in. The blogs are not moved into an opt-in state. The blogs are moved into a private state, which means that if I were a blogger, I would have to explicitly grant access to the people that wanted to see it. And so they don't have a system for requesting that access, as far as I know. You still have to email the person, and that person would grant that access. And it's like, you're effectively killing all of those blogs by doing that. So it's not a great step for Google. I mean, I feel like it's probably in reaction to, or at least one of the things that I had seen related to this is it's probably in reaction to what was it called when the fappening. Unfortunately, there were a number. I mean, I'm sure it's. I don't think we actually directly talked about it on the show, other than that not being a thing. But this is in reaction to the leak of several nudes that were hacked off of people's phones and iCloud accounts and otherwise supposedly private systems that were then made public. And this is kind of an attempt to rein that in, because one of the bigger complaints that was found is that there was nothing while you know, a lot of places would say that, hey, we're not hosting these images, we're just linking to them. And then if a hosting site was shut down for the pictures, it would be, you know, next to no effort to spin up another hosting site by, you know, using, you know, various free tools. And I think that is a problem, and that is something that can occur. But I think the bigger problem is that it's using a hand grenade instead of a hammer to fix something. And it effectively, you know, you're ruining it for everybody, man. Some people just want to see boobs.
Well, I think it was just this week Reddit banned consented pictures.
Oh, wow.
Like, you will get banned for posting pictures that you don't have the rights to. Stolen pictures.
Oh, wow.
That was just this week. So, in response to that, to the fappening,
and
as it's called.
I wonder, so does there have to be a complaint before you're banned?
Probably.
From the rights holder? Because I feel like reposting images is like, that's how you get karma on Reddit. Who has original content anymore? Come on.
Oh, no, stolen images.
Interesting.
Or stolen pornography.
Okay.
Specifically.
That could be interestingly interpreted, because that could be like, you know, scanned images, because those are previously copyrighted kind of thing. Yeah, that's really interesting. I didn't hear about that at all. Well, in any case.
They changed their privacy policy to ban pornography that's posted without explicit consent from the people in the picture.
Wow.
So it's going to be left, that's going to be a thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, consent is important, and having that is important. I think that will fundamentally change a lot of things on Reddit, and probably make for a very interesting moderation queue. I think that's gonna be very tough to enforce, but it'll be interesting to see how that works. What is really interesting and kind of not I don't know, kind of related to that is that how much of Reddit can be like programmatically done, like how much of Reddit is crawled by bots, because that I have seen that on images, like someone will post an image and then there will be a post very soon after that saying, hey, this is a repost bot, and here are all the instances of this image being posted on Reddit in the last like 6 months, so you can find all of the articles that were done by the same with the same image. And so I think that's kind of interesting. I'm more interested in kind of that approach, because it does call out the people that are reposting things and kind of somewhat shame them a little bit.
Shaming reposters is a thing.
Well, it's an interesting thing anyway, but kind of moving away from shame and hopefully into kind of boundless wonder is some stuff from a company called Magic Leap. And if you thought that segue was bad, you can just call it a Magic Leap and then everything will be fine. But
oh, it was a Magic Leap.
So Magic Leap is a sufficiently weird and interesting name, but they're a company working on stereoscopic 3D stuff, but it's without glasses. And they recognize that 3D can be done without glasses. If you've ever seen a Nintendo 3DS, that it works. It works, but you have to have a pretty consistent viewing angle. You can't like tilt it that much. You can't be like too high or too low or too far away or too close. And so the way that they're doing this, and or they're proposing to do this, I don't think it's even gotten to a prototype stage yet, but the kind of artist renderings of things are that you can create things that are indistinguishable from real things. The only reason that they're unreal is that you can't touch them. And they will create projections and then beam them directly into your eyes. And it supposedly will work such that the light is indistinguishable from like light actually bouncing off of something. And so the example things they have are these like ridiculously photorealistic rendered images that are superimposed on top of something, and it looks completely kind of ridiculous, I think, in the artist renderings. But if it could actually work, I mean, we're talking like holodeck level like appearance in here. I think this is a thing. It sounds really cool. Obviously, if you can't touch it, it will limit some of the stuff about it, but
well, there's great things in life that you can look at but can't touch.
Yeah. Well, it also, I mean, at least in the things that I've seen, are proposing that this isn't specifically just for holograms out in the world. It's meant to be something that you could potentially carry with you, and instead of being a fixed kind of visual projection, it's because it's specifically for you, it could be something that is augmenting your field of view. So augmented reality again, which I still think is more interesting anyway than virtual reality, although virtual reality is getting pretty cool. I had a report this week. Julie played with an Oculus Rift this week while I was out, and had a lot of fun with it. so that technology is getting better. She specifically said that it was not giving her a headache, which is more than I can say for pretty much every virtual reality system I've used. So that's kind of cool.
And once again, we're getting back to Google, since they invested $500 million in Magic Leap.
Yeah, but
last year,
probably no nudity then. So if how can you have 3D projections and no nudity? That just seems like a miss. Pornography, or, you know, drives technology. Everyone knows this. I
I
think
just
the
want to
Magic
play
Leap stuff.
holographic
Yeah. Anything to recreate the scene on the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, that's basically what I want.
Let the Wookiee win. Let the Wookiee win. Moving kind of from holography to just regular old
Motion
stereography.
pictures
Stereography. I don't know if you want to call it that, but
to the
movies.
talkies.
Yes, we're moving over into spoiler land to talk about a movie that I just saw this weekend that you saw opening weekend, if I'm remembering right.
I did.
And that movie is Kingsman.
The
Colin
Secret
Firth.
Service.
Yes, right. Not to be confused with the Secret Service.
Yeah.
But Kingsman, the Secret Service movie starring Colin Firth and a bunch of other people I don't know. Oh, and Samuel L. Jackson. But
Sam Jackson, Mark Strong,
oh
Michael
yeah.
Caine.
Oh God, Mark Strong, so good. Really, really good.
I loved this movie. The February being the time to push out shitty movies, this broke that streak.
Nice.
I loved it. It
Yeah,
was madness.
it was pretty crazy. What was really hilarious is that after the movie is just ending, and I lean over because I watched it with Julie, and I lean over and to get her reaction. And it's like, oh, it's kind of like Wanted, and I'm like, yeah, I was thinking similarly, but kind of like Kick-Ass. And I'm like, and then as soon as we both, I said that, the name Mark Miller comes up on the written by, and it's like, oh yeah,
Yeah,
that's why.
except this one's like really good. I mean, Kick-Ass is okay. I liked Kick-Ass, but oh man, Colin Firth was great.
Oh yeah. So Colin Firth, as so A, dude looks amazing in a suit. Like real good. But like when he's fighting, it's awesome. Just crazy. It's really, really good. So the fighting, I think, was great. I think what it does that Kick-Ass and Wanted didn't is if you look at the source material, because I'd read both the comics for Wanted and Kick-Ass, they both pulled a lot of punches in building those movies. They took sizable portions out of the source material and I mean, really watered it down a lot for general audiences. And I think Kingsman, I was kind of intrigued by it because it was gonna get an R, or it did get an R, and really deservedly so.
Oh yeah.
This is an R. But it was the kind of movie that I felt like if I read the comic book for this, and I might try and pick it up. I'm guessing it's a lot closer because both Wanted and Kick-Ass were amazingly violent in the books. And then I think for the movies, they were made a lot more kind of plot heavy and just a lot more kind of like they needed more emotional twisting than there was. And I feel like this movie is interesting coming kind of on the heels of John Wick, which was we've talked about on the show, and it was also, I think, just recently released to DVD and all those other kind of platforms. And I feel like that was, I mean, it was exceptionally violent and good. And I think this has that kind of like, let's not pull any punches and let's just do this movie however we want. And I'm guessing it's a lot closer to the comic book execution of the story. And it is very, I think, comic bookish in that they go they have leave to go a lot further, right? I mean, I think for comics, it's interesting when they do fight scenes and action scenes because it's obviously static, so you can't show like motion, or you can show motion to some degree, but it's mostly like snippets of the full action. What's interesting is that they had so much action in the action sequences that that like every frame could have been, you know, from a comic. I mean, it's just so crazy and so much stuff is going on in all of the fight sequences that I think it's you know, they were going for that like overwhelming quality on it, and it delivers for sure on that.
It's the best James Bond movie that's not a Daniel Craig reboot. Like, it felt, this is like if the movies of the 70s with Roger Moore were made today, this would be the best one. Like, they took so much from that world. Like, I saw a lot of on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Yep.
In it. Cool gadgets.
Yeah. Private planes,
one-liners, everyone dressed to the nines.
Yeah.
A bad guy with some sort of quirk.
Yeah.
You can see Sam Jackson basically doing a Mike Tyson impersonation the whole movie.
Yeah.
It was pretty great.
Kind of the weird henchman that has a strange thing about them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Mark Hamill.
Yeah, that was a nice touch. As soon as I heard him talk, I knew that was Mark Hamill. That was great. It was great.
Yeah, I laughed a lot at this movie. I enjoyed the good action. It was paced really well. And it even had some stuff that surprised me. I did not see some stuff coming in it. I don't even want to spoil it. I just want to go see it. Enjoy it.
So
you'll have fun.
I actually think if I had seen it in D-Box, it might have been more fun. Depending on how the D-Box was coded, only because there was so much kind of ridiculousness going on, it might have been interesting to get that kind of aspect to it. But I think the if there's a ding to it at all, and I'm trying to do this without really spoiling it, it's just that it does, you know, my mind immediately compared it to John Wick. And I feel like the thing that I really liked about John Wick, and Julie actually said this too, is that it has so much of a sense of kind of justice about it. You can, you know, it's like, these guys are bad, these guys are good, and they really kind of mess with it on this. This is more like, this is an action sequence. Here's a lot of stuff that happens.
But something that both those movies have in common, I think, is that they really built a good world. Like, there could be five other movies set within this universe they've created. Same thing with John Wick. There's a whole backstory. You could make a bunch of prequels. Sure. That would be their own things, which apparently they're doing. But it's just, I don't know. I like a rich world is a good thing. That's something that a lot of movies are lacking, I think.
Yeah, the comic book. I mean, Mark Miller is good at weaving those kinds of stories. I mean, the backstory in Wanted, I thought, was actually really good. The one in Kick-Ass, a little less. But what's interesting is the the collection of those things had been called Miller World for a while, because he does write in kind of an interesting style that has that kind of, like, everything is pertaining to something bigger, but we're not going to give you all of those pieces. We're just going to give you this one snippet into it. So, I mean, from that point of view, they're very good. I think it's a little too self-referential or self-aware for me to it was too much to enjoy. I think too many of the like deliberate jokes were not funny to me. I think the situations were really interesting and funny, but too many of the actual jokes were just kind of like, ha. Kind of not laughing at that. I was laughing at like the entire scene at the church, you know, that kind of thing.
That was amazing.
Yeah, really fantastic.
It's like they're not gonna, oh, they are gonna do that. Okay. Let's just enjoy this.
Wow, this is still going.
Yeah.
Holy cripes, this is still going.
And the nice thing is, people are going to see this movie. It's already made almost double its budget back. So hopefully we'll get a sequel.
Well, I
And
mean,
as sad as it is, that is how that works.
yeah. Look to see if he's written anything. I don't know. I was not familiar that this was a comic book until the credits rolled and I saw the name and then I looked it up and I was like, "Oh, this is based on a comic? Really? Huh. That makes a lot of sense." So I might again. It's one of those like maybe I'll check it out just to see the comparison and then pop it on. But you know, it was entertaining anyway. It was good.
Yeah, it was fun. A lot of fun at the movies. That's what you want.
So speaking of entertaining, specifically something that was not entertaining was something that I did just the last 2 days. So the reason the show was delayed this week, for those that follow the show on a regular kind of schedule, not on Smorgasbog or whatever day it is in this non-Gregorian calendar that we're listening to the podcast in, but I was in Sacramento, and in the hotel that I was at, there was some really truly awful TV on. There was a reality, quote unquote reality show called Street Outlaws, and during that, oddly enough, they had a lot of ads for a show called Outlaw Country, and I did a little looking on the internet because there was a weird kind of thing about both of the shows because they were marketed as reality shows, but they seemed so staged. And there were even things that there was even a disclaimer before the Street Outlaw or the Outlaw Country show saying that some things were recreated, some scenes were recreated, but they don't really give you a good sense of what is and what isn't because it's the same people in all of
So
these
that means
scenes.
all
Yeah,
of
pretty much. Pretty much. And I think it's really kind of crap to do that because if it's a scripted show, give the writers some credit and give them a writing credit because I looked very briefly at the credits towards the end of the show and stuff, and it's I don't remember seeing a specific writer credit. There were some story credits, but I mean, not that you would need a very good writer. Not maybe a good writer doesn't want to be attached to this level of show, but it. I mean, they had a fair amount of production value, and they did interesting things. Like, even if it is a recreation, they blurred out like people's faces during certain sequences, which are obviously recreations. It's like you're not storming you're not storming a bar with, you know, like rifles, and that's not going to be shot from multiple angles on the inside of the bar. It's just not. It's like,
So, speaking of shooting, what were you doing in Sacramento?
yeah, so in Sacramento, I was doing something a lot more interesting than watching TV. I was taking the class Fighting Shotgun from Tactical Response, which is a shooting school that I had taken classes from previously. They are based in, I believe it's Tennessee, and they come out to various places, including California, now and again. And I spent 2 days shooting shotguns all day. And
So how does your shoulder feel?
well, actually, my shoulder is pretty good, but my like kind of the skin over where my shoulder is, like right around my chest and out to my shoulder, is amazingly beat up because every time you pull the shotgun up and it's not in perfect position, it kicks back into your chest or your collarbone or whatever. And yeah, I got some pretty good bruises. But what's interesting is it's not a I mean, you can only do so much with a shotgun from a marksmanship perspective. So it's a
that's
lot.
That's the point of a shotgun.
Right. So it's a lot more about learning to run the shotgun in kind of situations where, like, say you run the shotgun dry. How do you reload it? It's not like a pistol where you can slap a magazine into it. You have to reload it through the ejection port and rack the slide forward and shoot. They had a drill where you essentially you have an unloaded gun and you have to hit a target 10 times. And so even if you had a fully loaded gun, most shotguns don't even have that much magazine capacity. So you're loading it through the side the whole time. And so getting that motion down was a really interesting thing. And I actually got kind of good at it. So
excellent. But, our podcast is well defended.
Yeah.
We are fully armed and operational podcast.
It was good. I mean, the reason that I had so many welts kind of in the wrong place was that you're doing a lot of mounting and unmounting the gun, especially if you're reloading out of the side. But we also did a lot of drills where you're not square to the target. You're like off to the side, or you're turned a little bit, and you know, learning how that you might have to shoot in a non-ideal position, how to hold it, and how to keep it running, all that kind of stuff was.
How many rounds did you go through?
I think I went through maybe 450 rounds of birdshot, and they say to use birdshot for training anyway because it kicks less, so you can still get, you can still shoot at things. It's just if you're actually trying to like hurt someone, you would want to use buckshot or slugs. So we ended up doing about 450 rounds of birdshot and maybe 40 or 50 rounds of buckshot, and then maybe 10 rounds of slugs. So, you know,
it's about, slugs kick, man.
About 500 something rounds. Yeah, the slugs kick, but I mean, we were shooting. They were saying like you can use slugs indoors, but I mean, you're really looking at like distance shots. And we actually were shooting at what they were calling 3/4 size or half size human targets at 50 yards. So it's effectively 100 yard shots at things. And I was shooting at them and doing well. So that was pretty cool. What was really interesting is that when we were shooting with birdshot, actually three things were really interesting. For the birdshot ones, we all of the normal shooting we were doing on steel targets, so you can hear it hit the target if you hit it or not. And they were kind of, again, half size targets. Which is roughly the kind of target size you want to be shooting for, on a person, right? So it was interesting because it would hit the steel and ring, so you knew if you hit it or not. But what was interesting was when you were up close, you would actually get a little bit of ricochet off of some of the birdshot. I mean, not enough to cause a welt or anything, but it was the kind of thing where it's like, oh, this is why they tell you to put eye protection on. You would not want to get any of that in your eye. So that was kind of interesting. One other interesting thing we did was patterned our guns with buckshot. And so they said that for every inch or for sorry for every yard away from your target, your pattern will spread out about an inch. So if you're 15 feet or 15 yards away from a target, you will get a 15-inch pattern of your buckshot, which I thought was an interesting kind of stat. And this is on an unchoked gun at all, which they recommend because you don't need to tighten your pattern at all unless you're shooting at something at a very long distance. But from that, we switched over to buckshot and put up a cardboard target and then shot it at 3 yards, then 7, then 15, then 25, and each time walked back up to the target and counted to make sure all the pellets landed, you know, within like a reasonable circle. And that was kind of cool to see like how the spread actually worked. And also the different guns had different spreads with different ammo. So like I was shooting Winchester buckshot and I changed it with someone else. And when I shot that, I could actually get all the pellets on the paper at 25 yards, whereas I could only do it at 15 with the Winchester. So that was kind of interesting. And supposedly that is even different between two guns from the same manufacturer. Because I was shooting.
So you got to get to know your gun is the main point.
Yeah. And one of the reasons, so the third interesting thing, maybe one of the more fun things we'd done, was we took a hostage shot with a shotgun. So
what?
So you set up two. They set up two steel plates, and the one in front is your hostage, and the one in back is your bad guy. And they said to shoot the bad guy in the head with the shotgun. And what it means is you have to know at that distance the pattern of your shotgun, so you can aim. You don't aim at your target. You aim off of it just a little bit because you know the pattern's going to spread out. So you just want to get some of the pattern on the guy. You don't want to get any on your hostage person. But we did that, and I actually did that one pretty well too. That was fun. So you aim like at least at the distance we were at, just like, you know, a little bit over their shoulder where it would be, over the bad guy's shoulder. And because the pattern spreads out, it caught a lot of the bad guy's shoulder and face and didn't hit the hostage at all. So that was kind of fun. Really interesting stuff. But it's the kind of thing you have to, you know, the interesting thing about the class kind of overall is that the shotgun has a lot of interesting myths associated with it and a lot of interesting realities associated with it. And I thought the class was really, really good at kind of bringing those up and pointing them out. So good on Tactical Response for coming out to California, where we really can't get training at this caliber. I mean, I've taken
I wasn't gonna laugh at that,
a number of classes for shooting in California, and the ones that are based here are nowhere as good as that one that I just took. So it was really cool to get training again from those guys. And it was interesting because some of the folks that I saw, I had seen in classes that I've taken in the past. So, I mean, I haven't connected with them all, but it's the kind of thing where it's like slowly forming this like group of people that know their shit.
Nice.
That's kind of fun too. But anyway.
Well, I had a pretty fun moment, which I believe I may have talked about before, when we went out for SF Sketchfest to see the Nerdist podcast live, which was one of the podcasts that inspired us to start a podcast.
Yeah.
I got on the show.
Yeah, you did.
The Clemens section, questions and comments. I played Fuck, Marry, Kill with the three hosts of the show. And if you would like to hear the audio of that, listen to the Nerdist podcast live at SF Sketchfest, which I believe is episode 642.
Yep.
I recommend listening to the whole thing. The show is a blast. Those guys are hilarious. But if you want to skip to just hearing me, I'd skip to about 47 minutes, 45 seconds. And it's just really short. It's a real short thing. But I was listening to it today because they just released it. And getting to hear me say something and then hearing people who I sort of idolized laugh at it was a pretty good feeling. So check it out. Take 2 minutes out of your day to listen to me not on my own podcast.
We're starting our podcast empire now.
And I think it's time to shut this podcast down.
Right on, man. Well, I will talk to you next week.
Till next time, Alan.